legislators who have essentially held these seats for decades, in some cases before I was even born, to draw the lines, to give them the...
This is Donette Thayer of Game Theory, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, ICRA.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 2nd. It is starting to get cold out there. This morning's early morning temperature range is 35 in Mackey, 40 in West Athens. Freeze warnings are in place as close as Beacon. Snow is expected today in New York. Main centers of interest will be the Adirondacks and the Lake Effect Belt. A little snow is expected locally to fall over Blackhead Mountain, but we are only looking at a dusting. A high of 52 happens around 3 p.m. Just after dark, some light isolated rain may fall. Overnight, temperatures get down to 33 degrees. Wednesday looks dry with a high of 48. We dip below freezing Wednesday night, reaching 30 degrees. Thursday, a high of 48, and another freezing night taking us down to 31 degrees. Friday will be dry with a high of 52. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1 a.m., low tide at 7:53 a.m., high tide again at 1:41 p.m., and low tide again at 8:16 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees. Sunset today will be at 5:36 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:26 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class storms are expected on Thursday as a CME enters our planetary region. Solar wind speed is currently 559 kilometers per second at 8.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 53. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz & Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement, using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Ginger Radio Hour with me, Justin Maiman, live from WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. Today I'd like to invite you to follow me down a rabbit hole of sorts. It's Peter and the Wolf, Ginger Radio style. Let's begin then at the beginning. You're hearing Peter and the Wolf. Peter and the Wolf was composed and written by Sergei Prokofiev in 1936, for the Central Children's Theater in Moscow. It was commissioned by Natalia Satz, who was the director there. And she ended up being one of the better early narrators of Peter and the Wolf. We'll come back to her in a moment. I've recently gone down this incredible rabbit hole surrounding Peter and the Wolf. We'll discuss why later in the show. But now what I'd like to do is offer up some of the clips, short clips, of the many, many versions. You may know Peter and the Wolf from your own favorite version. There are many out there, both that were recorded for vinyl, starting, of course, in the 40s and 50s, and then many, many live versions. We will get to one or two of those as well. But what I love about it is there was a time at which everybody and anybody, whether you were a singer or an actor or just a celebrity, was asked to be a part of a Peter and the Wolf recording. So I'd like to play through a couple of those for you. In no particular order. Captain Kangaroo.
Hi, this is Captain Kangaroo, and I have a musical story for you. It is called Peter and the Wolf.
That's really all we need to hear from that one. But there's so many more. Here's one of my favorites. This is Sophia Loren.
Early one morning, Peter opened the gate and went out into the big green meadow.
Here's a very different version. It's Boris Karloff.
I'm going to tell you the story of Peter and the Wolf. If you listen carefully, you'll observe that each character in this tale is represented by a different instrument of the orchestra. For instance, the bird by the flute.
And one of the more famous versions, and popular, Sting.
Early one morning, Peter opened the gate and went out into the big green meadow.
And now I'm just going to rifle through a couple that I like quite a bit.
وجاءت البطة التي عاشت في الفناء الخلفي لمنزل بيتر تتهادى وكانت سعيدة لأن بيتر نسي أن يغلق الباب وقررت أن تتمتع بسباحة هادئة في ماء البركة الساكن العميق.
This is a story of Peter and the Wolf. Each character in the story is going to be represented by different instruments in the band. The Wolf by the trombones. The duck will be represented by the muted trumpet. The bird.
This is the story of Peter and the Wolf. Each character in this tale is going to be represented by a different instrument of the orchestra. For instance, the bird will be played by the flute, like this. Here's the duck, played by the oboe.
So that's my personal favorite. That's David Bowie. I thought hard and long about which version of Peter and the Wolf I'm going to play in full today, and I'm going to come to that in a moment. But to be honest, I changed my mind 4 times this morning and a couple times last night. But before we get to that full version, and a wonderful interview that I was able to do last week with an actor and writer and musician named Jeremy Nicholas, who also has recorded his own version of Peter and the Wolf. But he's also written a lot, and he helped me dig this rabbit hole in this wonderful piece that he did for Gramophone about all of the versions that are out there, and he ranked them and picked his favorites. Anyway, we'll get to that interview in a bit. I want to play 2 other versions here. One from this past summer, live from the Hollywood Bowl. This is the LA Philharmonic. Just queuing it up here. And it's narrated by Viola Davis.
And now, let's hear the story of Peter and the Wolf. Early one morning, Peter opened the gate and went out into the big green meadow.
So as that was playing, I'm watching it on YouTube. It's pretty wonderful. This is from an audience member. It's a beautiful view of the Hollywood Bowl. Again, check that out on YouTube. It's a full version that hasn't been taken down yet. Let's hope it remains that way. So let's get back to one last version. This is Natalia Satz herself from 1970 with the USSR State Symphony Orchestra.
Рано утром пионер Петя открыл калитку и вышел на большую зеленую лужайку.
Again, that was Natalia Satz, the person who commissioned this piece in 1936 from Prokofiev. So now let's get to a full version. Let's slow down for a moment. I've played you all these clips. This is a piece you may be familiar with. It's one of the most popular and best-selling pieces of classical music. I'm going to play a popular version that has really grown on me recently. And that is Leonard Bernstein's version, which was recorded in 1960 with the New York Philharmonic. That's not it. Hold on. So I'm going to play this in full. It's worth it, believe me. And then I'll be back.
This is Leonard Bernstein, and I'm going to tell you the story of Peter and the Wolf. Now, usually before this piece begins, the speaker explains how each person or animal in the story is described by a certain instrument of the orchestra. But I'm sure you know all that already, don't you? Well, all right, let's see if you do. For instance, who's being represented by these three French horns? Right, the wolf. And what is this oboe describing? Right again, the duck. And now the flute? You're batting 1,000, the bird. Now, who's this low character in the clarinet? Right, the cat. Then, of course, there are these well-known drum beats. What's that all about? Correct. The hunters shooting their guns. Now, who is this lumbering old bassoon? Grandfather. My, you really know this piece, don't you? Well, that's all of them. Except, wait, I left out the most important one of all, the strings. That is Peter himself. I congratulate you on a perfect quiz. And now the story begins. Early one morning, Peter opened the gate and went into the big green meadow next to his house. The first friend he met was a little bird sitting on the branch of a big tree. The bird was chirping away happily, "All is quiet, all is quiet, all is quiet, all is quiet." All was quiet. Even the pond was still, because there wasn't a breath of wind to ruffle it. ¶¶ Soon a duck came waddling around. She lived in Peter's backyard, and she was glad that Peter had forgotten to close the gate, because now she could take a nice swim in the deep, still pond that was in the middle of the meadow. The little bird spied the duck and flew down next to her on the grass. "Huh," said the bird, "what kind of a bird are you if you can't fly?" "Huh," answered the duck, "what kind of a bird are you if you can't swim?" And she dived into the pond. They argued and argued, the duck swimming around the pond and the little bird hopping after her along the shore. All of a sudden, something else caught Peter's attention. There was a cat sneaking through the grass. The cat thought, while the bird is busy arguing with the duck, I'll just grab him. And she slowly crept towards the bird on her velvet paws. "Look out!" yelled Peter to the bird, who immediately flew up into the tree. While the duck swam as fast as she could to the middle of the pond where the cat couldn't touch her, and quacked at the cat with all her might. But the cat was more interested in the bird. She crawled round the tree and thought, "Is it worth climbing up so high? By the time I get there, the bird will have flown away." While Peter was watching the cat make up her mind, he suddenly saw his grandfather standing at the open gate. Grandfather was very angry because Peter had gone out into the meadow. "This is a dangerous place," he growled. "Suppose a wolf came out of the forest, then what would you do?" Thank you. But Peter paid no attention to his grandfather's words, because boys like Peter aren't afraid of wolves. But Grandfather took Peter firmly by the hand, led him home, and locked the gate. No sooner had Peter gone than a big gray wolf did come out of the forest. In a flash, the cat scampered up the tree. Duck's quacking became even louder than before, and in her excitement, she jumped right out of the pond. But no matter how fast the duck tried to waddle away, she couldn't escape the wolf. He was getting nearer and nearer, catching up with her. And bang, he got her, and with one gulp, he swallowed her. Now, this is how the situation was. The cat was sitting on one branch of the big tree. And the bird on another branch. Not too close to the cat. And the wolf, still hungry, was walking around and around the tree, looking at them both with greedy eyes. the meantime, Peter, not at all scared by any of this, was standing behind the closed gate, watching everything that was going on. Suddenly, he got a brilliant idea. He ran home, found a strong rope, and climbed up the high stone wall that separated his house from the meadow. You see, the big tree in the meadow was so big that one of its branches reached all the way over to the wall. So Peter grabbed hold of the branch and swung himself easily over onto the tree, right next to the bird. "Listen," he whispered to the bird. "Fly down and circle around the wolf's head. Only watch out he doesn't catch you." "Just as you say," chirped the bird, and down he flew. The bird came so close to the wolf's head that he almost brushed it with his wings, while the wolf snapped angrily at him from every direction. How the bird did tease that wolf, and how the wolf wanted to catch that bird. But the bird was cleverer, and the wolf simply couldn't do a thing about it. Meanwhile, Peter had been making a lasso out of the rope, and now he carefully began letting it down. And down. And down. Until he caught the wolf by the tail and pulled with all his might. The moment the wolf felt his tail caught in the lasso, he became furious and began to jump about wildly, trying to get loose. Peter tied the other end of the rope to the branch. And so the wolf's jumping only made the rope around his tail tighter. Just then, Peter saw some hunters coming out of the woods. They had been following the wolf's trail, and they were shooting as they came. Thank you. Peter, high up in the tree, shouted to the hunters, "Don't shoot! The bird and I have already caught the wolf. All you have to do is help us take him to the zoo." There's the story. And now... just imagine the victory parade. Peter, of course, in the lead. Following Peter, the hunters leading the wolf. Winding up the whole parade, Grandfather and the cat. Grandfather, of course, was pretty grumpy about the whole thing. "Well," he said, "and what if Peter hadn't caught the wolf? What then?" Above them all flew the little bird, chirping merrily, "My, what fine fellows we are, Peter and I. Look what we have caught. A whole wolf." Listen very carefully, you can still hear the duck quacking, very softly, of course, inside the wolf's belly. Because the wolf, in all his excitement and hurry, swallowed her alive. Thank you.
Many modern versions of that have the wolf regurgitate the duck so that the duck can lead a wonderful life yet again. I love that last part. I always start marching along. Beautiful reading by Leonard Bernstein. And beautiful music by the New York Philharmonic. That was from 1960. So why does Peter and the Wolf endure? I found somebody to ask. Jeremy Nicholas is a writer, an actor, a musician himself. He's done a version of Peter and the Wolf as a narrator. He lives in England, and I spoke with him last week to talk more about Peter and the Wolf, his gramophone piece, which is very comprehensive and goes through many, many versions of Peter and the Wolf through the years. He also picks his favorites. But I also asked him, what's the first version that really pulled him in? What was the first version that he ever heard? Here's Jeremy Nicholas.
But when I was about, I don't know, 10 or 11, maybe a bit older, a friend of my parents, very nice man, was getting rid of his 78. It was about the time that 78s were going out and LPs were coming in, rather in the same way that, you know, people are now flogging off their CDs because everybody's streaming. And he decided, I think, to get rid of all his 78s and replace his repertoire and the performances with LPs. Why not? And he knew that I, as a young teenager, was mad keen about classical music, well, music, but especially classical music. And he donated his entire record collection to me. I mean, it was a very generous thing to do. I just thought maybe my parents gave him money. No, they wouldn't. No, it was a gift. But you see, made me think for a moment now. Luckily enough, he had extremely good taste, and all the artists on these 78s were great artists. You know, the Toscaninis and the Stokowskis and Gili and people like that. And amongst these records was the first version I ever had of Peter and the Wolf, narrated by this man who, Americans, your listeners will not have heard of, a man called Wilfred Pickles, who was extremely popular at the time because he had a very popular weekend quiz show called Have a Go. Have a Go. And it was all like that sort of thing. Said, come on up the table and see if we can answer this question. Hey, that's a bit of fun, isn't it? Yeah. Now then, you've got it right. So £5, off you go. Well done. It was one of those. That's a North Country accent I was trying to do. All right. And so as a celebrity, of course, he was asked, as all record companies eventually did, you know, anybody who's a celebrity, you record Peter and the Wolf. And Wilfred Pickles made this version of it, which is very good, very successful in its day. And then the next one I really got hold of was by one of our great actors on a Red Label set of 78s on the HMV label, I think, with Sir Ralph Richardson, who had a more, you know, what we call RP voice, received pronunciation voice. And so he was a bit more sort of, you're an avuncular and old-fashioned, but really quite engaging.
So Pickles was your entree in...
That was the entree, yeah. And, you know, you, as a child, you, as most all these generations have done since it was written in 1936, every generation since then really has responded to the combination of the... of this simple story, very simple story, and this vivid, extraordinarily imaginative orchestration of Prokofiev.
Could you say a little bit more about that? Because the music itself is something that I think you do a wonderful job in the gramophone piece about, especially when you pick some of your favorites or ones that you don't think are as good. Yeah. You have some very specific comments on the music, which I want to get to kind of the enduring legacy of this piece a little bit later, but I am not qualified at all to talk about the music part of this. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about why you think that's such a strong composition.
Well, I'm wondering if there is any other precedent for it. There, of course, were things like toy symphonies. They were quite popular in the 19th century, and people, quite famous composers, would write pieces for, you know, xylophone, piano, doorbells and horse whips and stuff, novelty things like that. But I don't recall that anyone had ever thought of using the orchestra and particular instruments in the orchestra to depict color, provide character, or for as in the same way as providing character in a story. I think it's quite, I haven't thought about that before. I can't think of another one. Anyway, so you get things like Peter with the violins and the duck on the oboe and the cat on the clarinet and the hunters, the horn. What's the wolf? I forget. Is the wolf the horn? I forget now. Anyway, it's all this use of instrumental colours, which has this double thing of telling the story and introducing, which was Prokofiev's aim, children to the instruments of the orchestra. And some of the narrators in recordings do a very good job at that, explaining, you know, this instrument represents this character, this instrument. Some do that and bring you into it, and some are very, very formal, and they don't want you. They're still a little bit. Really, in the 50s and 60s, people are still very good at, what is this, classical music. Now then, Peter is playing on the violins. The violin sounds like this. And the cat is on the clarinet. A clarinet is a long, thin, black instrument, and it sounds like, you know what I mean, you get that kind of tone. You think, oh, really? Relax. Come on, chill out. It's not quite as serious as that. However, it does reflect the original tone of the script of the story. And I don't think I'm the only one, the only narrator who has had, well, has not had trouble with it, but has wanted to take a little of the formality off some of the original translation. I'm not sure who did the original translation, but it's kind of dry as dust, and you need to put your own inflections and your own speech patterns behind it. And I think that's okay. However, I think there are some narrators who go too far and just go completely off-piste and just drawing attention to themselves more than it really needs to. Can I put it politely like that?
So can you talk a bit about how you came to actually get to record and be the narrator on a piece?
Oh, well, that's how long have you got? It's actually rather a strange story.
I have all the time.
I had been appearing in the West End of London at the Mayfair Theatre in a one-man adaptation that I'd done of a book called Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome, which is, I don't know whether you know it, Justin, it's a classic of English humour. I commend it to you. And this had done rather well. We played for 5 months in the West End, and I was nominated for an award, and I was then asked to record the audio version of Three Men in a Boat. One of the people who worked in the company for whom I recorded Three Men in a Boat was also working for this new record company called Naxos, which had just come onto the market. And because he knew my Three Men in a Boat performance, and because he also knew I read and wrote music, he thought I might be a suitable person to do this recording. Was I interested? I said, well, When do we leave? He said, well, the CD is already made. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, they've already put out this CD. Naxos has already put out this CD of Peter and the Wolf. I said, what do you mean, without a narrator? He said, yes. I said, well, you can't do that. That's stupid. You know, you said narrator and orchestra thing is not an orchestra thing. And he said, I know. I said, well, how do we do this? He said, well, we want you to go up to Leeds. Leeds is a city right up in the north of England. And we've got these people who work for the company and they've got a recording studio. So go up there and record it like that. So I thought, all right, you know, it's a decent fee, and off I went. It was one of the most difficult jobs I've ever had to do. I'm quite good with the microphone. You know, I know what to do and I know how to use a microphone. Well, this was a real shabby little setup in his basement, this bloke's basement. And I remember it very clearly. It was in the 1980s. I was having to time the narration to insert it into the CD as it was being played live. And some of the narration was far too long to fit in. And it was reinventing the wheel. And I thought, at the end of the session, I thought, this is just not worked. You know, you can't just slip it on top of the orchestra like this. And in fact, when it came out, they'd done a very clever. There are only a few little moments where you think, oh, that's bad, or they nipped that off, or they cut into that. But in fact, they did a very clever job, and I was quite pleased with it. And in fact, it got quite good reviews. It sold quite well. I think the top choice I made was one which combined a slightly formal air and nearly to the original printed text, rather than go for a personality, a true personality. It was narrated by this an ex-actor, but most famous over here as a newsreader and radio presenter called Richard Baker, who you won't have known in the US probably. Dickie Baker, who died a couple of years ago, aged about 98, who had the most beautiful radio voice. I always envied his radio voice. Lovely, dark brown, clear as a bell, and very warm and welcoming and, you know, assuring and measured. And a lot of, you know, and a twinkle with it as well. You've got to be able to do a little twinkle in the voice to narrate Peter, I think. So that's why I chose Peter and the Wolf, and also with the orchestra,
the new Philharmonia.
That's right, with Leppard, who, mm-hmm. Yes, he also died recently.
I'm just curious to know what are all the elements, what are the reasons that you think that this piece endures?
If you think, we're going to take you, little darlings, we're going to go to our first orchestral concert today. We're going to hear an orchestra play. What's that, Mummy and Daddy? And you take a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, or maybe a 12-year-old to a concert hall for the first time. They've never seen an orchestra before. And they have a framework, a context, i.e. something like Peter, to help them associate with what they're going to hear and see. I think you might still be quite engaged with the experience. And then when you had Peter and the Wolf, maybe, then you get rid of the narrator, he's off to the pub for a drink, and then the second half is something like Benjamin Britten's Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, when you see the whole thing, and the whole orchestra at the end absolutely let rip. Then I think you might come home thinking, well, thank you, Mummy and Daddy. In that way, it will still work. Because, you know, Prokofiev, it's charming music. He can be very acerbic as a composer, very sarcastic and brutal and all that, but actually he's an old softy. And you get some beautiful, some lovely tunes and wonderful ideas, don't you, to kind of, you know, to help you along with it.
Lovely man, Jeremy Nicholas, joined me on a discussion last week. As you could hear, it was over Zoom, so I was a little bit loud. Anyway, what a wonderful man. Check out his version of Peter and the Wolf. So the question we end at today here on Ginger Radio Hour is why? Why does Peter and the Wolf pull at me so? So I started making this list this week, and I've kept adding to it, and they're bullet points, and they're all the reasons that I think that I can't stop thinking about it, or listening to it, or listening to many different versions. So one is, it's dramatic. I like dramatic things. It's a teaching device. I like that about it. I really enjoy the idea of assigning people and animals to instruments. So think a little bit about what instrument you might be. It's open to many interpretations, which is what I was hoping to have you hear a little bit today. There are too many for me to play in 1 hour. I would have to lock the door here and not let them do any other radio today from WGXC if I were to play you everything I wanted to. Peter and the Wolf is about animals. Everything about animals is wonderful for me. It's also storytelling plus music. That works for me. It's whimsical. There's so many iterations and interpretations. Also, the internet, right? The internet and streaming make it very easy to collect and find all of these versions, which is wonderful for me. It's been a nice way to collect my thoughts. Also, most importantly, maybe, I'll never catch up to all of it, and that works for me. This has been Ginger Radio Hour. Let's play one last version. On our way out, this is from the 60s, the Clyde Valley Stompers. Have a great week.